Welcome to Hashtag Finance Master, a weekly show where Anders Leo Lindberg discusses the latest trends in finance and accounting with a global audience via LinkedIn audio. Recorded live, anyone can tune in and take part. Just raise your hand and share the stage. Will you join Anders next time? For now, kick back, relax, and enjoy this week's show.
Welcome, everyone, to the Hashtag Finance Master Show. I can't believe that just this morning we released episode 5 of the Hashtag Finance Master podcast. It's all coming together. It's all growing as a community, and it's all because of you. Without you listening in, what would this all be? Without the brave souls coming up on stage, there wouldn't be a show. So thanks a lot to all of you. Let's just have this small moment of celebration. But I'm told that to really have a show that's working and a podcast that's working, you need to have 21 episodes under your belt. So we are pretty much halfway to have something that's going to be a thing. But with your help, we'll keep it going. Today's topic is the first part of a new series that I published this morning. And I've called it Unveiling the Holy Grail of Finance. But maybe before I get started into today's blog post, maybe by using the virtual hand, if you call it like that, on the reactions. So if you can give a thumbs up if you're an Indiana Jones fan. If you don't know who Indiana Jones is, that's another story. But are there any Indiana Jones fans in the house? Put some thumbs up. Yeah, I can see some thumbs up coming up here. Maybe I'm too old. Maybe I'm the only one having watched these movies, but no, I can see a lot there. So why am I talking about Indiana Jones? Well, in 1989, I know that's a long time ago, 1989, there was a movie called Indiana Jones and the Lost Crusade. And in this movie, Indiana Jones goes looking for his father who's gone missing because he's chasing the Holy Grail, which obviously is a mythical artifact in religion. It's a long journey with lots of different challenges. It's set in the time leading up to World War II. So there's evil Germans all over the place trying to kill them. And at the end of it, they do find the Holy Grail, only to lose it like 30 minutes later in an earthquake or something like that. But it was a long, challenging journey. At the end of it, they prevailed. And somehow, the data to insight journey is the same thing. Or at least it feels like we spend so much time working with data, chasing inside the Holy Grail, and then at the end of it, we find nothing, or maybe even no one listens to us, and the insights are completely wasted. So it feels like we're Indiana Jones on the Lost Crusade sometimes. We're chasing insight to influence decisions to create an impact in the business, and they keep escaping us. It's certainly a challenging journey. I think Brett Dykes, if you know him, he's called it the Data Analytics Marathon. So here's another long journey that's going to be a challenge for people to complete. I ran a marathon once. I've only done once, 4 hours and 9 minutes. I can probably imagine everyone who's run one marathon would always remember their time. The reason I remember the time is because I wanted to finish before 4 hours and I didn't. So that was heartbreaking as well. Same thing with the Data to Insights journey. And it's the data to insight journey, or actually the data to impact journey, that we are talking about in this new article series here. We're excited to share my thoughts on Brent Dykes Analytics Marathon from a finance professional's perspective. We are at the start of the Hashtag Finance Master Show. Just briefly repeating the rules. Anyone can come up on stage. Just raise your hand and come up and speak. So diving into the topic from this morning, new series, Data to Impact Journey. And you probably remember a few years back, like the phrase was saying that data was the new oil. It's probably not so, let's say, time appropriate anymore to say data is the new oil, but it's definitely the lifeblood of modern business. I mean, some companies are founded on data alone and using that data to learn about customer interactions, patterns in the market, something they can use to create products that they can sell as services to their clients and make money off. So all companies can use data in their decision-making. But the claim of data being the new oil is definitely not overblown. I think it's spot on in the sense that data, just like oil, it's something crude, right? It's something that by itself is hardly useful until it's being processed. So You know, in fact, data has taken on importance like oil, electricity, human thought, all combined. Data, measurement, and optimization have become so fundamental to the ways in which we organize business and society even, that they are conceptually near inseparable. And yet, just as crude oil, it's completely impractical for the average end user. Data on itself, or on its own, is not useful. Then I repeat this. Data on itself is not useful. You know, if we should continue the fossil fuel metaphor, we might think of data as the naphtha, the complex hydrocarbon that is not yet a tool in itself, but rather a raw material that we can process. I wouldn't say manipulate, I really don't like that word when it comes to influencing, but let's say process and leverage to create things that can help us out in so many different ways. So the challenge, of course, has been that we've spent countless surveys show it's up to 70% of our time collecting and processing the data. Kind of inefficient, especially if the goal is to actually use the data for something. I'm not saying we don't need to process the data, then obviously it becomes useless, but we need to be much more efficient about processing that data. And those are some of the topics that we'll discuss in this series here. I'm just going to do a brief pause just to see if anyone has any perspectives on data being the new oil, or at least data being similar to oil, a crude product that on itself is not useful. Feel free to raise your hand, come up on stage, share your perspective, or ask a question. Hey, Sofyan, how are you? Good to see you here.
Hey, Anders, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks. Maybe just for those of you who don't know you, you have a lot of followers, so probably many people know you, but just give a brief intro of yourself and then share your perspective.
Well, I'm a finance professional since 15 years now. I work as a freelance FP&A professional. And aside of that, I'm more specializing into finance presentations, storytelling, slides building, and a bit all of this. So my perspective on this and on the data is that today, more than ever, the data is really important. And as you mentioned, the oil of a business. The thing is, when we say that, I have the impression that we more focus on data that was before never used by companies, like behavioral data on the online world, for example. Like you watch Netflix, they gather data on the time you spend looking for a new movie, the time you spend on watching the description, and so on. So clearly, it gives a new dimension on the type of data we use. And for us finance professionals, it's something that we have completely to learn, because we have data that's not even possible to manage into a model, for example, like the number of units sold, the price. Before, that was somehow easy. But now, with the quantity and the type of data we have available at our end, it's almost impossible to work with the tools we used to. So we have to completely change this mindset and become more data and insight user than data gatherer as we were before.
Thanks for sharing that perspective, Sofyan. And I fully agree. It's moving from producing the numbers or the data to using it. I think that's really what finance professionals need to really own up to, because producing data is, of course, still necessary, but if you don't have any sense of how to use it, it's really just a lot of wasted effort. So I really like that perspective. And I think the volume and the complexity of data is what has increased, right? Because there's always been lots of data, but it's been more the quantitative data, like you mentioned, the volume and units sold and all that stuff. But today, like behavioral data, we're trying to quantify the qualitative data in the way so they can be processed for BI tools and whatever else, and actually come up to insights. So it's a growing, budding field. And of course, in many of the first episodes, we've talked about the data analytics teams as well that needs to help us on this journey here. They are the ones with the skills to actually, let's say, decrease the time spent on collecting and processing all this data and actually increasing the time using the data. So I think there's definitely a lot of merit and value in that. Akili, welcome to the stage, returning here for another round. Please introduce yourself and share your perspective or ask a question.
Thanks for having me. Hi, everyone. My name is Akili Toria. I'm an aspiring data person. My background, I grew up in finance and supply chain, working for a retailer in North America, Loblaw companies for a number of years, Walmart. I love hearing all this stuff because for me, I'll say it's a breath of fresh air when you get the finance team or the finance side really looking at how they can leverage data from a transactional level. Or Brett talks a lot about the stories. When you do have Brett on, I'm interested in hearing, or hopefully he shares a story about how he got started. One of the things that I want to share with the group or get perspective is, where do people find their biggest challenges? Is it the actual data? And coming from a finance side, is it the actual data? Is it the culture of the company? Is it the maturity level of where the company's at? I don't know, passing it out there to see if anyone would share what they're experiencing and what they see.
I think that's a great question to throw out there, Achille. And if I should add my two cents to it, I think it's, at least from a finance professional perspective, it's typically because we start at the wrong point. We basically start with the data and then we analyze that in many different ways, Excel sheets and other tools and whatnot, Power BI, and we are hoping that the insights will appear. But if we don't know what we're looking for, right? If we don't know what are the insights that business leaders are looking for to make those better decisions, we're going to be looking forever, or we might be very lucky that it suddenly appears. So I think it's the wrong starting point. We need to know what we're looking for. We need to have a hypothesis around what would have to be true for this decision to be a good decision. Okay, now we have three assumptions. Those we can start to analyze. Let's find data that can either accept or validate or reject this hypothesis. So I think it's a completely different way of doing analysis than just looking at, okay, we have some variances here, or just dump all the ERP data into an Excel sheet and then we start analyzing. So I think if we can change the perspective on how we need to analyze and just have the starting point, what insight do my business leader and my business stakeholder need to make better decisions? I think it would be a much better process and also a much more efficient process. But those are just my two cents. So thanks a lot, Zufa and Achille, for sharing perspectives so far. You're, of course, welcome to stay on stage and keep sharing also as we go through it. Basically, data only becomes valuable when it's been processed into insights. And insight, and I've probably said this 100 times, if not more by now, but we always ask ourselves, what is insight? Because everyone is talking about insight. It's the holy grail, right? If I have some insight, then I can change decisions, create value. I'm like a super person. So what is insight? Insight is when you have information that one, business leaders currently do not know about, and two, can help them make better decisions. And though Brent Dykes, he has some similar definitions, he probably specifies it even further. But for me, it's important to have a very wide definition of what insight is, because insight can come from all over the place. Why should we limit ourselves to, for instance, financial data or hard quantitative data? Sufyan talked about the behavioral data. There's so much to learn from that. We had Rose Pankaris on the podcast that not so long ago, is going to be released in a few weeks. And she also talked about using all these different data sources and the sort of value you can create from it. So it's behavioral data, it's as our users interact with different online products, for instance. There's just so many insights that can come from there. Of course, we need to know what it is that we're looking for. But basically, data is only useful because it helps create insight. Businesses cannot run on data alone. If all we ever did was to monitor and quantify, we'd be operating like a closed loop that achieved nothing but static. Basically, we're just standing still. Insight is the missing piece, the product of data that allows us to take action, or better action. Otherwise, we're basically just running the company on gut feeling, which many companies have done that. Many business leaders have run their business or their part of the business on, well, I'm experienced, I know best, we are going to do this. Okay, is it backed by data? No, it doesn't matter. I've planned before, I think it worked, right? We've probably all heard those arguments one point or another during our careers, and maybe they're right. But my gut feeling is that if we make data-based decisions, we'll be more right than if we don't. And I think that's the key. Having a data-backed decision doesn't mean you always make the good decision or the right decision, but it increases the likelihood of you doing it. That's basically all we can do. The data to insight pipeline is absolutely crucial for us as finance professionals. We need to understand how data is gathered in an efficient manner, how it can be processed and worked with, and most importantly, the ways in which we can put it to use for the purpose of generating better outcomes. So of course, if you have process data, i.e. insight in your hands, but you don't know what to do with it, you're not able to communicate. You're not able to get in front of business leaders to share your insight. Then of course, it doesn't matter, right? So we need to also know how to put it to use. Even if we know that and we actually influence the decision, we also have to follow up on it, right? Someone takes action. Rarely it's us, but it could be us. Someone takes action and we need to ensure that we get the expected outcomes from it. Otherwise, again, it's pretty much a wasted effort. So I'd say data analytics is kind of like a means to an end, right? Means to an end to generate insight. And we talked a lot about this, as also discussed the Sufia just earlier in the show, in previous articles in this newsletter. We looked at the role of data analytics in relation to the modern finance function. We looked at the differences between the two specialisms and what the rise of data analytics mean for the ways in which the finance function creates value. So as I mentioned, data analytics teams are the ones that are going to help us travel faster, more safe, better on this journey here from data to insight and ideally, of course, all the way to impact. I'm just going to bring Angel up on the stage here and then we will continue. Hey, Angel, how are you doing today?
Hi, I think on the few episodes, I just wanted to maybe brief some of the newcomers. Here we talk about like the finance and FP&A versus data analysis. And who's going to take lead? Is data analysis or data analysis is going to take over the FP&A's job? And I've been actually talking as from a headhunter perspective. I've been actually reaching out to data analysts in my space. And I think the advantage that the FP&A professions that we are already being educated as a finance business partner, as well as there's a lot of trainings about FP&A and as well as finance storytelling. So the existing of data analysis, we can actually leverage that to our advantage because we have better resources, a much powerful data. And then from that, we can use our soft skills to be able to translate that into a bigger picture. So I just want to add on to that. So like from my perspective, is data analytics is going to be a threat to FP&A? From my perspective, it's going to be no, because we have already been in the process on the evolutions of finance, that we need to be a finance business partner. We need to be a finance storyteller. And with data analysts that I've just been speaking to, they are just starting on the topic. So we're already maybe like 10 or 20 steps ahead. So I just wanted to share a little bit of my experience in talking to both FP&A and data analyst professionals. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for sharing that, Angel. And I absolutely agree. These teams are better together. A strong collaboration is going to supercharge the data to insight, the insights to impact pipeline that we're looking at. But if we work in silos, if FP&A professionals probably work in suboptimal ways to do the analysis, the processing, and the data team, they definitely work suboptimally in terms of communicating the story. So the collaboration is really what's going to bring this home. And I've explained, you know, the idea of data analytics is going to be the end of finance. It's just not true at all. Instead, as with so many tech-related developments, the explosion in awareness and understanding of data is actually a boom for the finance function, providing us with an extraordinarily powerful new leader for value creation. To use that tool, we need to understand how to take data to insights, of course, and enlist the assist of these data analytics teams. And over the course of this new series, I'll break this down in the steps on the journey, seen from my perspective, of course, and go over the key hurdles that we as finance professionals are likely to encounter. We'll also look at effective practices for gathering data, cleaning and presenting that data, understanding business needs, and producing valuable outputs that can be returned to the business to generate better real-world outcomes. And I think just maybe a few questions for everyone to reflect on. I can see we also have Aliyah wanting to come on stage. I'll bring her up on stage in just 30 seconds or so. Just think about some of these questions. How is data currently used in your organization, if at all? I'm sure it is, but how is it being used? Do you know who collects it and how they collect it? Or what collects it? Could also be a robot, right? And what does the word data actually mean to you? That's, I think, a good starting one. What does data mean to you? What is data in your organization? So just some questions for reflection here. I'm just going to bring Aliyah up on stage as well. Hey, Aliyah, welcome to the stage. Congrats on your move to Vancouver. It must be so exciting. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing really good. It is really early right now in Vancouver. But two things I just wanted to see when I guess Sufyan was actually talking. So just quickly about me, I've been in finance and accounting for the last 15 years and only recently moved to Vancouver to pursue an MBA. The two comments I have, I actually studied management. So what's interesting is that management is considered an art and decisions are largely based on experience and even managers would say they have gut feelings. It's our, you know, human nature to interpret the past and, you know, use this as a basis for our judgments. And most managers believe they're pretty good at making decisions and sometimes even ignoring hard facts. They are convinced that their judgment and intuition are even better than the algorithm. But in reality, I don't think that's the truth. But I hope that it doesn't take many years for management to accept and people in the boardrooms that algorithms are actually better than humans when it comes to making decisions. So, but the second thing I wanted to see was that the truth is that an insight is nothing more than information until you use it to actually change something. Maybe it might be a new process or improved control, or maybe it's a new product strategy. The trick is in knowing what you want to change and then applying the right DNA tools and algorithms to get there.
Absolutely, Ali. And I think if you don't know what you want to change, you're going to be spending so much time just analyzing stuff. And I don't think it's really helping anyone. And I think in terms of the business leaders making gut-based decisions, I hear from many people that they find it hard to convince business leaders to take a data-driven approach. And I get that, right? If they have been successful in their career, if they're running a big business unit or even a whole company, and they've come to that stage from making decisions the way they do, then it can be hard to really challenge them. So what I always recommend to do is that say, okay, well, try to document some of the decisions that they're making. Maybe ask them, okay, so I know it's based on your gut feeling, but what assumptions are you making behind this decision? Try to document those as well. And then try to see, okay, how is it then going? Was the assumptions true? And if yes, okay, then go back and interview. Okay, so how did you know this was going to be true? So that you can put the experience of that business leader into the way you want to generate insights. You probably can't create an algorithm out of the business leader, but if they're right, a lot of the time, they're right because of something. And we need to sort of codify, is maybe the wrong word, but we need to find out why they're right. But what's more likely to happen is that many of the assumptions hold not to be true, and the decision could still result in value creation, but just a lot less than what could have been if we had made data-driven decisions. But you kind of need to build a repository of decisions made that turned out in suboptimal ways to help the business leader understand, well, the data said we should maybe have done something slightly different, but we did this and it didn't exactly turn out the way we expected. So why don't we try next time to make a data-driven decision and see what happens, right? So maybe you can try to convince them in that way, basically using their own data against them somehow. But that's just one perspective on it. We are almost at the end of today's show, at least we'll go into the Q&A part. So if anyone has any questions as well, feel free to raise hand and come up on stage. And if you want to continue following this series here, then don't hesitate to go and subscribe to the newsletter that more than 133,000 other people have done. New content comes out every week, sometimes even twice a week. So don't cheat yourself out of that. But let's close the show down for today, unveiling the holy grail of finance, talking about the data to insight to impact journey. And I'm really excited to talk to you about this in the coming weeks. Hope to see you again on stage next week. And as always, see you out there on LinkedIn. Don't forget to engage, follow, send messages. If anything, I'm here to help. So bye for now, everyone. And thanks so much for being here. Thanks, Aliyah. Thanks, Angel. Thanks, Sufyan. Thanks, Akile. The show wouldn't be the same thing without you.
You've been listening to Hashtag Finance Master, a weekly show recorded live on LinkedIn Audio. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest trends in finance and accounting. And why not join Anders every Thursday on LinkedIn to share your own views and appear in the next episode?